Knight basketball, 5 seconds to play. Up ahead to Hudson. Ross hesitates, head fake, three on the way. He buries another one right before the buzzer for Lakeside, and they take the 22-19 lead after three.
Off rebound Beiser. 8 seconds to go. Here's Brockman. Gerstner is filling on the left side. Brockman into the corner. Gerstner has it. Plenty of time. Three-pointer from the corner. Yes! At the buzzer! Brockman with the perfect setup, and Gerstner drills it right between the eyes and splashes it for three, and Boyd leads by four at halftime.
Couple of buzzer beaters last night, high school basketball that we had on the radio. One that beat the buzzer at halftime for Beloit, and one there for Lakeside to beat the buzzer at the end of the third quarter. No buzzer beaters in regards to winning a game, but we did have buzzer beaters to beat the clock at the second and third quarter last night. And we begin there with high school hoops. Dusty, with the results from last night.
Yes, we'll go through scores first here real quick, and then I'll recap games quickly from the Osborne preseason tournament as well. Girls scores Clay Center 50-35 over Beloit. Thunder Ridge beat Lakeside 45-38. Osborne over Stockton 64-45. Clifton Clyde over Rock Hills 47-28. Amos Moore's Classic first round. It was Smith Center over Sylvan Lucas 54-41. At the Tescott tip-off, Wilson winning over Southern Cloud 41-17. And Riley County won over Concordia regular season action 34-9 there. Also on the boys' side, Clay Center 65-59 over Beloit. Lakeside over Thunder Ridge 34-28. Osborne a 63-13 win over Stockton. Clifton Clyde beat Rock Hills 57-28. Rock Hills actually led by one at halftime there. Or actually, that's the girls' game. My apologies there. Clifton Clyde boys won 57-28 over Rock Hills. Amos Moore's Classic first round. It was Sylvan Lucas over Smith Center 45-36. And Tescott tip-off, Southern Cloud beat Wilson 59-54. And Concordia moved to 2-0 last night on the boys' side of the 45-31 win over Riley County. I'm going to quick recap of the preseason tournament from yesterday. The Thunder Ridge girls winning over Lakeside 45-38. Thunder Ridge led 36-18 at one point in the third quarter. Lakeside got within three late and had a chance actually to tie it a couple times, but couldn't hit three-pointers there to get it tied. And then Thunder Ridge scored the final 4 points to win 45-38. Tori Slavic with a game-high 21 was the athlete of the game for Thunder Ridge. Cameron Ritzke added 13. Also 17 points for Taylor Betts of Lakeside, 11 for Kylie Bergman. Thunder Ridge 2-0, Lakeside now 1-1. Boys contest, Thunder Ridge led 17-10 at halftime, but it was a nice run there for the Lakeside boys, a 14-0 run from the end of the third into the beginning of the fourth, and they would take a lead, but Thunder Ridge actually went on a 7-0 run to reclaim the lead, and then actually 9-1 led 28-27, but a 7-0 run to finish the game all from the free throw line for Lakeside. They won 34-28. Ross Hudson with 11 points, 3 three-pointers in the game. Only player in double figures for Thunder Ridge was Jace Randall with 10. As Thunder Ridge is 1-1, and Lakeside improved to 2-0. The Osborne girls started their season out with a win over Stockton, 64-45. Trinity Luters with 27, including 3 three-pointers, so picking up right where she left off. The leading scorer over the last few seasons for Osborne, and since she had 27 there, was named the athlete of the game from SNS Drug and Home Health Employee. 1-0 start here for Osborne with that 19-point win. They led by as many as 25 in the third quarter. It's a 6th straight win for Osborne girls over Stockton. Stockton in double figures was Ava Dix with 16, and Brim Muir had 12. Osborne boys, no problems with Stockton. They jumped out to a 19-0 lead, had a lot of early takeaways and turnovers and easy layups, and they led 21-3 after one. They would go on to win it 63-13. As Johnny Hamel had 8 in the first quarter, finished with 16. He was the athlete of the game. 14 points for Doak Guttery for Osborne. 10 points added by Nathan Goheen, matching a career high. Nathan will be relied upon to be a bigger scoring threat this year for Osborne, most likely, as Osborne starts the season 1-0 and Stockton drops to 0-2 with that loss. It's
Johnny Hamel against his former team.
Exactly. Yep. The Stockton transferee came over to Osborne last year because Stockton didn't have a team, and then he stayed at Osborne, and Stockton does have a team this year, but it's going to take a long time for them to get grooved in, and they just don't have experience and a lot of talent on the team right now, and it's been a struggle early for them, but we'll see if they can make those improvements as the season goes on there for Stockton.
All right, I had the games Beloit-Clay Center last night. Clay Center girls beat Beloit for the 7th consecutive time. Clay Center jumped out to a 7-0 lead. Beloit called a timeout. It was 10-0, and then Beloit settled down, cut it to 3, 12-9 at the end of 1. It was 21-17, and then Clay Center had a 3 there late in the second quarter, led by 7 halftime, and that's as close as Beloit girls would get. They're now 1-1 on the season. Olivia Wright led the way with 10, a career high, and she was our SNS Drug and Home Health Athlete of the Game. Reagan McDonald had 16, Danny Carson 14 for Clay Center. Center. Both Beloit girls and Clay Center girls are 1-1. Block of the game from H&R Block in Beloit went to 5'3 sophomore guard Kaylin Fallis. And the Cunningham telephone cable connection of the game was Cassandra Thompson to Olivia Wright. So the Beloit girls were 14-31 from the line. So if they could have done better at the foul line, could have been a little bit different. But Clay Center controlled the game for the most part. But I was impressed with Beloit being so young as they were. To, you know, when it was 10-0, I'm like, man, this could be over before we even started. Mm-hmm. And they made it a game, but they're now 1-1. The Beloit boys are 0-2 as they fall to Clay Center in nightcap. 13 lead changes in the first half alone. Beloit, as you heard that three-pointer by Noah Gerster on a nice setup by Wyatt Brockman, beat the clock. And you thought Beloit had some momentum going in the locker room, leading 28-24. But instead, it was Clay Center that came out in the third quarter in the second straight game. Beloit has not played well the early part of the third quarter. It cost them at Concordia on Friday. It cost them last night. Clay Center won a 17-4 spurt, led by 9, 41-32. Beloit would battle back a 9-2 run of their own, cut it to 2 going in the fourth quarter. Then Beloit was down 53-43. Another good run by Clay Center, and Beloit's body language didn't look so great coming off the court to a timeout. So a spirited timeout, I'll say that, and it was needed. And it fired up the team and got some guys going. Next thing you know, Beloit went on a run, got it all the way down the 2. Wyatt Brockman hit a three-pointer. Bryce Beisner had an and-one opportunity. Gerstner hit a couple of threes there in the fourth, the one that cut it to 2. But Clay Center, they maintained their poise, and they hit clutch free throws down the stretch, didn't turn the ball over. And Mark Hoffman was really the star of the game. He had 20 points and 2 threes and was really able to get wherever you wanted against Beloit's zone defense and set up his teammates if he wasn't scoring himself. And Clay Center, we knew they had pretty good shooters, didn't play well Friday night at Rock Creek. They shot the ball a lot better last night as both teams hit 8 three-pointers on the night. And Hoffman led the way at 20. Cole Platson at 17. He's a sophomore. Jace Weller, 15 and 3 threes. He's a sophomore. And Beloit was led 4 guys in double figures. That's better balance than they had last Friday. Noah Gerstner, a career high 14. First time he's been double figures in his career. 9 of his 14 in the second half. Hit 4 threes, 3 in the fourth quarter. Wyatt Brockman at 11 and 2 triples. Bryce Beisner had 12 points, 10 in the first half. And Eli Johnson with 10 points, 8 in the first half. Johnson and Gerstner are our co-SNS Drug and Home Health athletes of the game. Block of the game, as it seems to be almost every game for Beloit, is Bryce Beisner. And the connection of the game was that terrific pass by Wyatt Brockman into the corner to Gerstner to beat the buzzer there before halftime. And so Beloit 0-2. And, you know, the boys, I think the big thing is just consistency. You know, talking with Coach Eiler after the game and during the post-game interview, you know, just developing consistency. There were good things that Beloit did last night. They could easily be 2-0, but they're not. They're 0-2. And the reason they're 0-2 is because they just haven't been consistent enough. And they've had a bad stretch in the third quarter of both their games coming out of halftime, out of the locker room. And if they could clean that up, then they'll be a much better basketball team. But, you know, I went back and watched a little bit last night after the game. And I, you know, there's a lot of positives to take out of the game. And Clay Center is an improved team, and you know, you would like to think that if you played these two teams you played already or later in the year, you like your chances. But at the same time, you play them when you play them. And so Beloit boys get to face the number one team in the state, Southeast Saline, coming to town on Friday. Southeast won over Smoky Valley 70-38, close game at halftime, and a 22-4 third quarter for Southeast. So and as I was telling my son last night, I said, listen, it doesn't matter whether anybody outside of your team believes you can beat Southeast or not. And Southeast will probably come in confident, like they should, number one team in the state. But I said, you have to believe. And if you don't believe, then you're done before you start.
Yeah.
I said, you have to believe. And Beloit does have guys that can shoot and get hot. And if you hit threes, that's the great X factor in an upset win. Southeast maybe doesn't play their best game, because if in order to pull upset, usually the other team has to play not as well, and you have to play pretty well. And it can be done. We've seen upsets all the time. And one of the things I told my son last night, it's kind of a private thing, but I'll share it with people, because I think this is what you should think about when you have these opportunities. Is, and we see it with K-State football every single year. They're doubted over and over and over. And then, oh, no, Adrian Martinez went down. Now we're stuck with Will Howard. Oh, now we love Will Howard because he's playing great. But upsets happen. It happens all the time in sports. And as I told my son last night, I said, you're going to play Southeast twice, maybe 3 times, because you're in the same sub-state. Mm-hmm. I said, if you beat him just 1 out of the 3 times or 1 out of 2 times, whatever it may be, I said, imagine this. You will remember that game for the rest of your life. You'll be talking at reunions down the line in the future going, you remember that night when we knocked off the number one team in the state and nobody thought we had a chance, and you know what? I mean, that's where you can create an amazing memory You know, amazing. You know, I still know that they talk about Northern Iowa and Farouk, whatever his last name was, that hit that three when he shouldn't have taken it and beat KU. They've been talking about that years later.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a gigantic upset in the NCAA tournament. And nobody gave Northern Iowa much of a chance to win that game. And so, you know, St. Peter's last year knocked off Kentucky. Nobody gave St. Peter's a chance to win that game, a 15-2. Nobody gave UMBC a chance as a 16-1 against Virginia. And yet these things happen. Because those teams believe, the teams that pull off upsets believe, and the key is to get off to a good start, and that helps your confidence in games like that instead of getting down 10-0, 12-0, 14-2. So that's important for Blake coming up on Friday. But I told my son, I said, you need to look at this as an opportunity to knock off. How many teams across the state can say we have a chance to knock off the number one team in the state? Many times you never play the number one team in the state. So here's your opportunity on Friday. And the girls are going to have a tough test as well. Southeast is the favorite to win the league there, and they won by 2 over Smoky Valley. So that's coming up on Friday, which we'll have for you on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com. Live video stream and CKSSports.com via the Blake Trojan channel. And then, of course, we got locker room chats today, Dusty.
Yeah, tonight we'll talk with the head coaches of Beloit, Osborne, Smith Center, and Thunder Ridge, and those will begin about 5:15 here this evening on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com. If you ever miss them, you can also listen online at KDCountry94.com on the Locker Room Chat podcast. If you want to catch our wrestling locker room chats from last night, that's where you can find those as well. Tomorrow we're going to have to do the same thing, Z96 point through the lake, because we have basketball on KD Country 94. So I'm probably going to post those early in the day on the website as well, because some of that will be outdated by the time the basketball games start at the preseason tournament tomorrow for St. John's, Tipton, Lakeside, Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas locker room chats tomorrow. So they'll be posted on the locker room chat podcast, and we'll probably run them on Z96.3 tomorrow as well.
About what, 5:15?
Probably about 5:15, 5:20, somewhere in that area again.
Okay, sounds good.
Should work out. So.
So you got the four games coming up tomorrow, and then I'll have the games on Friday night with Beloit and Southeast, and then you have more games Saturday.
Four of them on Saturday. We'll start earlier on Saturday. It'll be a 1:20 pregame, 1:30 tip for the first game there against Stockton and Thunder Ridge, and then the second doubleheader will be Lakeside Osborne coming up on Saturday. So you can find full schedules for everybody at ncksports.com for high school hoops.
I had somebody tweet, "Who's that Gerstner kid?" I said, "I never heard of him."
Never heard.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I was going to say exchange student, but let's see what else I was going to add. Oh yeah, the KBCA rankings did come out, and Southeast Lean is the new number one in 3A boys as they had knocked off Heston in the opener on Friday. So they are number one. And what else stands out to you?
Really, from the immediate area, the Osborne girls moved up to number two in 1A Division I, and Smith Center stayed at number two in 2A girls. 3A girls, Phillipsburg's number three from the Mid-Continent League, and then Southeast, as you mentioned, favorites in the girls' side of the NCAA as well, and they're number nine this week in those rankings. And on the 2A boys' side, TMP Marion's number three from the Mid-Continent League. So some of the rankings that stood out there, and again, you can find them at ncksports.com. Wrestling rankings came out and were updated yesterday as well. Class 3-2-1A, Smith Center is now number three after they opened their season with a first-place trophy at the Trigo tournament there over the weekend. Eli Franklin of Smith Center is number one at 215 pounds. Bentley Montgomery is two at 157, 106 pounds. Brogan Monty of Beloit's in the rankings this week at number four. Co Nielsen of Rock Hills and Beloit is number four at 113. And Alex Wilkinson of Smith Center is number four at 144. So, again, you can always find all the rankings and everything you need to know at ncksports.com.
All right. Busy day yesterday and a busy week of high school sports. And as Dusty just said, ncksports.com is the place to go to get a lot of that information that you crave or need. I see something here. There's some soccer pregame show or something, and one of the announcers was quoted of saying 19 goals in 40 games. You do the math. That's a goal a game, pretty much. No, it's not.
I don't know how to tell you this, buddy.
I don't know if it's the lady that said it or the guy that said
it. It's a half a goal a game at best.
That's really, whoa. Somebody needs to go back to, somebody flunked math really badly. Really badly. Holy shnikes.
I mean, I'm not good once they start putting letters in it, but I know the numbers, you know, and that's not accurate.
Yeah. If I ever say anything that stupid, I could be suspended for at least 24 hours.
It's still a great stat. Congratulations to that player, whoever.
Well, that's
talking about
19 goals in 40 games by one person is insanely great.
But
it's not one a game.
It's not one a game, right.
It might feel like it. Now, I won't lie. It probably feels like it. Uh-huh. You score one every two games. Well, that feels like you feel it. We scores every game. But it kind of feels like it because there's not a lot of goals in soccer. I get that. I get that, no doubt. Oh, my goodness. It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit.
Noel Gasson on the pick and roll. He can't miss. David Gasson with a career night, 22, and he's 9 of 9 from the floor.
Yeah, not bad when you go a perfect 9 of 9 from the floor. K-State men improved to 8-1 last night. They were down 28-14. Abilene Christian was hitting threes left and right, but K-State recovered. And they took the lead before halftime, never looked back, won 81-64. They're 8-1 off to their best start since the 17-18 season. They hit 59% of their shots, 64% in the second half, 23 assists on their 31 made field goals. That's a really good sign of sharing the ball. 52 points in the paint. And just played about they played about seven players the majority of the game. Four Wildcats in double figures, and the career night from junior David Gasson, as you heard. 23 points, perfect 9 of 9. Marquise Noel, another double-double, 15 points, a season-tying 12 assists to go along with 6 rebounds and 3 steals. K-State men continue the homestand on Sunday, December the 11th, this Sunday at 2 o'clock, as they will host Incarnate Word, who's 5-5 on the season. And there's a highlight of the dunk where there was four different K-State guys that could have dunked it.
I was confused.
It was like they were off a trampoline. And it was they were doing some kind of halftime show. I was like, well, great pass, and then like, who's gonna catch it? And I think three
guys
thought they were going to.
Like, three guys literally touched the rim during the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I didn't understand, like, apparently on a dunk there's no offensive goaltending, because Cam Carter had his hand on the rim when Keontae caught it and dunked it, and then Tomlin comes in behind him and grabs the rim at the end of the play too, and I'm like, I guess it's a dunk.
Well, it's not basket interference until the ball's in the cylinder.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I was like, I thought that Cam still had his hand on the goal, but it's a dunk, so it's hard to probably say, hey, that was goaltending. That was wild.
That was a crazy play. Here's Jerome Tang on Gasson.
He's a real mismatch at the playing the five because he's so fast. He can outrun fives down the court. He can sprint out of ball screens. And they're developing confidence in each other because, I mean, he went 9 for 9, but you got to credit our guards for throwing in the ball. I see David's game continuing to grow. I feel like he can shoot the three. Right? I believe that he can make plays from the high posts and on a short roll as teams make adjustments, and it's going to just give us more options and, you know, just put the defense in the bind more.
Well, that's just a sign of how much more athletic this team is. Oh, Gasson's another example of that. Keontae Johnson, among others. And the K-State men are 8-1. The K-State women are also 8-1, and they'll play Kansas City tonight at 6:30. The Wildcats ranked 24th in the country, and just the one loss to Arkansas at the Virgin Islands in that tournament here recently. And also, believe it or not, there's indoor track and field for K-State coming up on Friday and Saturday. The women back in action on Saturday against South Dakota State. We mentioned the men will play at 2 o'clock against Incarnate Word. Our focus on K-State athletics brought to you, as always, by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit as well. Big game last night in college hoops and men's basketball. Number 2, Texas, did not execute very well in the final 2 minutes. Illinois made them pay, went to overtime, and number 17 Illinois beat number 2 Texas 85-78 in overtime at Madison Square Garden. Also, big news this morning, Aaron Judge is going to get a lot of money. He returns to New York, where they boo him after having MVP-type season. But Aaron Judge says there's 360 million reasons why I'll put up with booing. Aaron Judge will get 9-year contract, 360 million. The San Francisco Giants pursued him aggressively and were the Yankees' primary competition. The Padres reportedly made a hard push as well. The $40 million average annual value is a record for a position player, beating out Mike Trout's $35.5 million. Judge joins Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander as the only 40-plus million per year players in baseball history. Judge made a pretty good bet on himself. He rejected a 7-year, $213 million deal in spring training. So by betting on himself, he got himself an additional 2 years, and he got himself an additional $147 million. I would say that was a pretty good gamble and bet on himself by Aaron Judge. And you wonder why we said Juan Soto shouldn't take that $480 million contract the Nationals offered. That's why.
Right. He got an extra $10 million a year doing that.
That's pretty decent.
Average annual salary there. And
he could just kick $1 million over to people like, you know, Jason Broadfoot, Wade Gerstner, Dusty Dynas.
Yeah.
You know?
We would appreciate it.
Yeah, we would greatly appreciate it. I'll carry his bags for him. I'll even practice trying to get him ready for the Yankees booing again. I'll yell and scream and boo at him, you know, at his mansion if he wants me to. I'll go hoarse if I have to. I'll give up my vocal cords if he pays me something.
That's quite the sacrifice.
That's what I do. Yeah. I try to make people better. So Aaron Judge gets a big contract. There's some other deals going on in Major League Baseball free agency. And speaking of that, the Royals have needs. Of course they do. The Royals, of course, last year struggled, and they have changed managers, pitching coaches, changed pretty much the entire staff. And J.J. Piccolo, talking about starting pitching. The Royals need some starting pitching.
I still think having a starting pitcher in our rotation is really paramount, maybe even two. And it doesn't take away from anything that our young guys will do at some point, but we'd be looking at short-term deals to help bridge that gap and allow them to learn and just settle into being good major league players. And you always want to upgrade your bullpen. It just seems like you never have enough bullets down there.
Yeah.
And our lineup, we're fairly comfortable right now. It's a matter of who's going to play third base. And, you know, we do have great hopes that Bobby Witt Jr. is going to settle in at shortstop. He's certainly capable. And then we just got to move some other things around.
All right. You need five starting pitchers, actually, not just one or two. But I know what he meant.
Right.
Brady Singer is a lock for the rotation. And after that, who knows? I mean, Daniel Lynch should be. Chris Bubich, I don't think, is a guy that's going to be a regular guy in the future for this team and the rotation. So I think, and Lynch has been up and down. I mean, after Singer and Lynch, they bring Greinke back. He's in the rotation. Carlos Hernandez is not ready. Bubich, I don't think they like there. Kowar is messed up, and hopefully the new pitching coaches can help him. Asa Lacy can't throw strikes in the minors, but hopefully he'll figure something out. I'm really, really hoping the new pitching coach, Brian Sweeney, and the new staff is going to help these pitchers, because the Royals have talented pitchers, I believe, and I just think they have the wrong people coaching them. And I may be wrong, but I hope to God I'm right, because if I'm wrong, then that means the Royals are just going to be good, bad for a long time.
Right.
But if I'm right, then that means that there's a chance to be optimistic about this year and the future of this baseball team. But I understand what he's saying is, you know, we got maybe some starters that have pitched in the big leagues, but maybe not quite fully developed where they should be here. So we need to bridge the gap, and we got to find a couple of guys that can eat innings. You know, Mike Minor is one of those guys that Royals had, and then he signed a deal, and then they got Greinke before last season began. So you might be looking at an older pitcher that is coming off an injury, probably somebody coming off an injury or a down year, and you hope that you can get, as J.J. Piccolo just said, one or two guys to slide into that rotation. And Brad Keller, I don't know if he's a guy that's going to be back in the rotation or not. I mean, the Royals have all kinds of question marks with their rotation.
I looked up
and the bullpen needs help too, as he said.
I looked up some of the starters that are available here, and here's one I like, Sean Manea. Or Manaea,
who used to be with the Royals.
Yeah, yeah.
They traded him to the A's to get Ben Zobrist.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep.
He did not pitch well last year.
No, but I think for the most part, he has been pretty good. But this even has a little bit of a market value guess at him at about $10 to $12 million.
Mm-hmm.
So if he could maybe do a two for, say, 25 or something like that, 2 for 22, 24, something like that, I think that would be a good one for the Royals to look at. I mean,
I wouldn't disagree with you. He was with the Padres last year. See, I saw him in person when I went to the Padres-Royals game, and he was horrible.
Yeah.
He was absolutely horrible. But he's had some good years in the big leagues. Let's see. And he's, 12-9 in 2018, ERA 3.59. 2 years ago, ERA 3.91, 11-10. Last year with the Padres, 8-9, ERA of almost 5. Now, that's not so good.
Right.
Now, he does have strikeout stuff, though. A strikeout per inning, that's good. His walks aren't bad. But, yeah, did not have a good year last year with the Padres. But, you know, that's a guy that's – I'm trying to see how old he is here.
30.
He's 30. So that's – you're not getting an over-the-hill guy maybe. So I like that idea that you have. And he's a former Royal. He didn't pitch at the big league level with the Royals, but they traded him and got Ben Zobrist. Now you bring him back. He's a left-hander.
Yep.
So that'd be another thing to consider as well. So, yeah, I mean, that makes some sense. I wouldn't have a problem with that. The question, of course, is will the Royals spend that type of money on a guy to bridge the gap?
And right.
You're gonna have to spend money no matter who yeah. you go get. You're gonna have to spend. It's not like it used to be back in the day. You're going to have to spend $5-10 million on a guy.
Just for point of reference, this little website, SportTrack, also kind of has the market value of Greinke in about that same area as well. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. If you're going to bring Greinke back, sure, fine, I get it. But if you're not, then maybe this is a guy. Other than that, you're looking at guys that are more expensive, or you're looking at total reclamation projects, or guys coming off injuries, and you just don't know 100% what you're going to get after that.
The Royals, really the biggest question in their position lineup, as you heard JJ Piccola mention, is third base. Evan Longoria is available, a free agent, but I think he'd want to play for a contender. Third base seems to be an opening, and it's interesting that they say that, because Bobby Witt Jr. played better at third than he played at short defensively. But Bobby Witt Jr. is going to be the shortstop, which I have no problem with that. I'm cool with that. But Adalberto Mondesi, that means that the Royals, they talked about yesterday, he's been rehabbing. I think he avoided arbitration. So Mondesi will be back with the Royals, but will he be healthy? Who knows? But where's Mondesi? Let's say Mondesi is healthy, he needs to be on the field.
Yeah.
Is he going to play third then? Because he played a little bit of third a couple years ago. Because right. Bobby Witt Jr. is a shortstop. We're done with the Mondesi experiment at short in regards to he's just never healthy. But the Royals talking about really the only spot they got to figure out in their positions is third base. And so I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about this team because Hunter Dozier's played third base. So apparently Hunter Dozier's not an option at third base. So that's interesting revelation by J.J. Piccolo that really they just got to figure out what they want to do at third base, or maybe they'll continue to rotate people around to where Dozier plays third sometimes, and then Bobby Witt Jr. shifts to third, and Lopez goes to short, and then Massey plays second. Where does Nicky Lopez fit in this whole situation? I mean, is it Massey? I would guess Lopez is your starting second baseman, so is Massey going back to the minors after a short stint up with the Royals? What's the plan there? Very interesting, I thought, when he said, third base. Yeah. Like, do we really need to go spend money to go get a third baseman? I think we got guys that can play third on this team.
I was surprised he specified.
Yeah.
I would have thought he was just going to say infielder or maybe a utility guy, because that kind of, like, well, he did explain that they're going to move Bobby to shortstop. But you're right. Where does Mondesi and Lopez fit into this? I can see where you're maybe saying the experiment of Mondesi as your everyday shortstop is over. Because
if he's healthy, you could play him at third.
Right.
He's played a little bit third.
To ask somebody
but
with those two injuries.
You can't count on him to be healthy, obviously.
Right, to be your everyday shortstop is just not going to happen. You got a little list there. Matt Duffy looks like, to me, would be a good one. He wouldn't be super expensive at the third base position there, about the middle of your list. He wouldn't be super expensive. He's a guy that could slide over and play first base. Royals have a lot of guys there, but say something would happen here or there for a day or two, he could do it. He could DH, whatever. But
help me out on the positions here. So for the Royals, you got Taylor in center. I'm trying to remember. It's been so long since baseball season.
Probably Waters in right or left.
Who's in left right now?
Everybody.
Yeah,
they put Pryor there. They put Melendez there. They put Melendez in right. They put Eaton in right.
Melendez has to be in the lineup. And I would hope that Prado is your first baseman. So if Prado's your first baseman, then and Salvi's your catcher. So your DH is Pascantino, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Melendez has to play the left or right field. And then my vote would be Drew Waters would be the other outfielder. Well, where does that put Hunter Dozier? If he says third base is what they're looking at,
probably just as a utility.
We're paying a lot of money for Hunter Dozier to not play every day. And by the way, his wins above replacement was not good.
Right.
Hunter Dozier had a bad year. It almost sounds like the Royals are pretty much, almost moving on for Hunter Dozier a little bit.
Yeah.
Which I don't. Or he's going to play the outfield and Drew Waters go back to the minors because he has options. You have Melendez, Dozier, and Taylor in the outfield, and that's why third base is open.
Yeah.
Now, if Mondesi's healthy, you've solved it. But we've been saying if Mondesi's healthy for the last 5 years.
Right.
It's not a.
And you can't count on it, so.
I kind of didn't just completely read that as he wanted a free agent at third base. I think he just was
he said we could shuffle things around, but he was saying we don't have a third base.
Yeah,
what he's saying.
Exactly. It's I kind of took it as just saying we need to figure out what we need to do at third base,
right.
Whether that is a free agent or whether that's somebody that we're going to just kind of rotate and platoon in that position.
I agreed.
I didn't necessarily think, hey, I need to go get a third baseman, but. Yeah, I mean, there's options there on this team that can play that position. But again, it's the same thing we talked about last year. It's like, why do we keep jerking these guys around in different positions? Let's put them in a position and let them play ball.
Right.
And so that's the thing with right field, left field, everything like that for me. Third base, shortstop, second base. I mean, everything was being rotated to where it was like, let's get a guy in a position and let him play.
Yeah.
Instead of having to worry, okay, yeah, I know I'm not changing in my lineup here probably very much as far as hitting the ball, but I got to focus on three different positions that I might play coming up tomorrow or the next day. I might be in right field. The next day I'm catching. The next day I'm on DH. Next day I'm in left field. There's four different positions that MJ Melendez was worried about last year.
Yeah.
And so
Nicky Lopez,
he's
second base, shortstop, and occasionally third base.
And it's like, let him learn here.
Bobby Witt Jr., short third.
That was my contention the whole year last year. Like, I had no issue with MJ Melendez trying to learn another position.
Yeah, but just pick it.
But don't move him around to four different positions in a week span.
I agree. Well, you know what they say? If you have all kinds of options but no clear option, it means you don't have a good option.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, as we talked about it, well, if you have a quarterback controversy on your team, more than likely it means that you don't have one great quarterback. You have two decent ones.
You don't have Steve Young and Joe Montana.
Yeah, that's a little different. Yeah, that's just a little bit different. Here, let me throw one out for you. Free agent pitcher, because Piccolo said we were looking at two starting pitchers. Obviously, bring Greinke back, that's one. Jason mentioned Sean Manaea, who did not have a good year last year, but he's only 30. And, of course, the Royals traded him to the A's for Ben Zobrist, which was a great trade and helped him win a World Series. I would have no problem with that, although I would happen to see Manaea pitch against the Royals as a Padres, and he was lit up like a Christmas tree. But just maybe a bad day. But he does strike out one per every inning. That's still power stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's a lefty. I would be okay with that. But let me throw another one out there for you. Noah Syndergaard.
I like it. I like it. I mean, it's not my money.
I wouldn't
money,
have an issue with it, no.
So I would say the more the merrier, but...
Does anybody connect the dots to this or not?
Just as...
Noah Syndergaard was the one that threw at the head of Osiris Escobar in the World Series and got the Royals all riled up. And Noah Syndergaard, when he pitched against KC, got booed unmercifully when the Mets came the next year, the series to start the year. Noah Syndergaard, Thor, a guy that the Royals basically hated and fans hated... Could possibly, I mean, wouldn't that be wild if he's a Royal?
Oh, it wouldn't be.
It happens all the time,
right.
I think it would be a little bit weird for a bit.
It shows you just how things change.
I would be okay with it.
Be weird for the fans, right?
Between the fans.
For the fans that actually were fans back in 14 and 15, that you're not the ones that are going to jump back on when Royals are good again.
Yeah, there's probably a point where Noah Syndergaard's like, I'll never. Ever go to the Royals, but that's when he was healthy and striking people out left and right. And then the Royals are like, we would never ever take Syndergaard on our team. But that's when they're contending for titles and stuff. Now things have changed. Noah's broken down at times, and the Royals
now.
Aren't doing so well. So now they're like, this makes a little sense. So it's just funny how those things change. You know, I like this sport track says about $15 million for him. I don't know.
He was 10-10 last year. ERA at 3.94. He doesn't have strikeout stuff, though, anymore. He doesn't have the velocity anymore. 95 strikeouts, 134 innings. So Manaea would actually maybe be the better option. And they're the same age, 30 years old. And Syndergaard last year ended up being with the Phillies there in the World Series. You know, remember Lucas Duda?
Mm-hmm.
Who made the horrible throw when Hosmer's dash home. If that's a good throw, but due to Hosmer's dead at home plate.
Right.
The Royals had him a year later. He was on the Royals or 2 years later. And then Matt Harvey had a stint with the Royals, too.
Yeah.
So if we
did
had
not
those
go
guys.
Well, but he was there.
No, it didn't go well. No, Matt Harvey became a washed-up pitcher. Man, interesting stuff. All right. The Rams have their quarterback of the future, Baker Mayfield. The Rams have claimed him off of waivers. The team announced yesterday the Panthers waived Mayfield on Monday, something interim coach Steve Wilks said it was a mutual agreement between the two sides. Wilks said Mayfield asked to be released after finding out he wouldn't be the starting quarterback or backup in Carolina going forward. You know, I feel for Baker Mayfield. I've been a fan of Baker Mayfield. I thought he would do some good things in Carolina. I was wrong. But ever since he tore up his shoulder in Cleveland, he's just never been the same player.
Right.
And and he played very well prior to that injury. And you see this. You know, Matt Harvey was – since we brought up Matt Harvey, there are some similarities between Baker Mayfield and Matt Harvey is that they had a few good, really good years, and it was a short shelf life. Right. Now, Baker's still got time to maybe somehow re-find it and get the right fit, and maybe he can resurrect his career as a starting quarterback in this league, although it's going to probably take a guy to get injured for him to have a shot. But he wasn't even going to be the backup in Carolina, so it's like, hello, why am I going to be here if I'm a third string? I could be a backup somewhere else. And with the Rams right now, he might end up getting a play. But and, of course, he has no weapons in L.A. now with all the injuries that they have, and Kupp is probably out for the rest of the season. But, you know, that's why you got to strike when iron is hot in sports. You know, I remember this. These folks that we met on a trip to I try to remember if we were in the Dominican Republic that time. They were Mets fans, and we got to hang out with them. We met them at the bar there on the beach, and we stayed in touch for a while. And then you know how it goes. After a while, you kind of lose touch. And then when the Royals and Mets played in the World Series, Andrew was his name, him and his wife, and he sent me a message on Facebook, and he said, congratulations on winning the World Series. You guys were the better team, and it's pretty cool that you guys made it back to the World Series and able to win it all. And I said, well, your future is bright. I said, you've got great starting pitching. You got DeGrom, you got Syndergaard, you got Harvey. I mean, they got plenty of starting pitching. I said, as long as you stay healthy, you guys could be very well right back in the World Series a year from now like the Royals were. And then guess what happened? Broke down.
Yeah.
Pitchers broke down.
Did not stay healthy.
DeGrom stayed healthy, but Harvey got broke down. Syndergaard got a little bit banged up. Next thing you know, the Mets didn't get back the next year. And until last year was really the best year they had since the World Series appearance. And Matt Harvey really was never the same pitcher after he went back out for the ninth inning, mm-hmm. up 2-0 in game 5 of the World Series that Royals rallied to win. So that's why your Royals fans were very, very lucky, because it isn't. It's not normal to go back to the World Series after you lose the year before. And there's tons of teams. We see it in the NFL all the time. The Super Bowl loser many times doesn't get back. I mean, the Chiefs were the Super Bowl loser 2 years ago. They didn't get back last year. They should have. They're up 21-3. But that's what's amazing about what the Chiefs have done and what the Patriots did in their day. And I'm not saying the Chiefs are at the same level of the Patriots dynasty, because the Patriots won lots of Super Bowls. But the Chiefs are put in their position to win multiple Super Bowls by being the AFC title game 4 straight years and hosting it every year. That's unheard of. Nobody does that. It's never been done before, hosting 4 straight AFC title games. And the Chiefs might end up doing 5. But the problem is, how many chances are you going to get? And if you just go 2-2 in those games, eventually, if they're at home all the time, you should be more than better than 2-2.
Mm-hmm.
If you get it again this year, you should be 3-2, 4-1. And if you lose again the AFC title game at home, you're 2-3. You've wasted those opportunities that you worked so hard to get. And lots of teams don't get that. You know, the Bengals may never get back to the AFC title game for 25 years, for all we know. I mean, now they look pretty good the other day. But we see the Rams win the Super Bowl, and now they're a mess. They sold out to win a Super Bowl, and it worked for them. We've seen many teams make a run to the Super Bowl, win or lose, and just completely fall off the map the next year. And we see teams in baseball make the playoffs. Oh, you know, they're going to be right back here next year. No, usually they're not. The announcers say it after every post game, after the World Series, losing team. Well, they'll be right back here next year, blah, 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 blah. No, they're not. Phillies are spending a whole bunch of money left and right on people, and the Phillies were close to win the World Series. I'll be right here, and I'll say it, and I'll eat crow. The Phillies will not go to the World Series next year. Mark my words. They're on paper, they're going to look better. They're spending more money. Mm-hmm. They're improving their roster. Harper's out for part of the season with Tommy John surgery already. The Phillies will not make the World Series next year.
What happened?
But they'll be a better team. They'll probably win more games.
Yeah.
And they will not. The Braves are a great example. Won the World Series last year. They were better this year. The Braves were a better team this year, without question.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't even get out of the first round.
And it almost is the same thing that does it. It's amazing how much more taxing it is, like, on your bullpen pitchers to get through a playoff in Major League Baseball, because you use the same guys over and over and over and over in those games, and you use them longer than you usually do. Mm-hmm. And you can only do it about once or twice before those guys break down. And you keep them because they're the guys that got you there, and then you sign them when they're up to more money. But then they start to break down, and relieving is such a volatile position anyway. You can be good 1 year and then for no reason at all not be good the next year. Mm-hmm. And that happens anyway, playoffs or not. So, yeah, playoffs, you know, the Phillies, you know, hopefully for them, you know, some of these signings help bolster that. But, man, I hate to bring everything back to the Cubs, but the Cubs, you know, they won the World Series. They had Baez and the Rizzo and Bryant and all this stuff, and now none of them are there. And so it's just amazing.
They got Cody Bellinger now. Did you see that?
Well, yeah.
1 year, $17.5 million.
Super.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it goes fast. So enjoy when you have some success.
That's
enjoy
why I'm trying to tell Chiefs fans, you got to enjoy what you got. Don't get all so mad after losing to the Bengals the other day. I know it stinks to lose the same team three times in a row, but guess what? All these other teams have been losing to the Chiefs 3, 6, 7, 8, 28 times in a row, with the Broncos, whatever it is the Broncos have lost. So it's not as bad as you may think. Chiefs fans act like it's the end of the world, and they're still tied for the number one seed in the AFC. By the way, I thought this is funny. Royals Review, follow them on Twitter. Ken Rosenthal reporting to Aaron Judge, 9 years to earn $60 million. Jason and I talked about that earlier. Royals Review puts, I wonder what the Royals' final offer was. I'm guessing there was no offers. Because the Royals knew they could not get Aaron Judge.
8 years, $40 million, and some Oklahoma Joe's coupons.
We will give you a percentage of ownership along with Patrick Mahomes. We'll allow you to have a suite in a new downtown stadium we build in 10 years.
World's a fun pass.
World's a fun pass. Tickets to Sporting KC to watch a 0-0 tie.
All over. We'll just give you your own table at Oklahoma Joe's.
Yeah. Less booing.
Yeah.
We'll guarantee you less booing.
Yeah. Bob Kendrick could probably work out free admission all the time to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum for Aaron.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea as
we
well.
We can't give you money, though.
Yeah.
Tech Nine comes to your apartment for a concert. You know, just...
Aaron, hey, somebody said Justin Verlander didn't want to go where somebody boos, and he'd go into New York Mets. Right. I mean, anybody in New York boos. So that was kind of funny. Yeah. And then somebody said he wanted to go to somewhere where he wouldn't be playing in October. Mets did play October this year.
Yeah.
Short little wild card series as it was. But, yeah, that's a lot of money. Aaron Judge now the third player in Major League Baseball history to be a $40 million-plus player per year, joining Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer. And he's the highest-paid position player now in all of baseball. You know, Todd Clover's birthday is today. We've established that he's about 85. actually, he's probably around, 57, 58. It's his birthday, and Jason said, well, Todd got a good birthday gift, Aaron Judge going back to the Yankees. I'm going to tell you something. I don't think Todd Clover's super excited about this, and here's why. Listen, he loves Aaron Judge. Todd won't talk anything about Yankees baseball until suddenly they do something great. And all of a sudden, Todd says he's not watching baseball. The Yankees stink. And when the Yankees stink, they're like 10 games over 500. I'm like, right. How about you be a Royals fan for once? You know, really be a true fan. I'm just messing with you. It's his birthday. I should be nicer. But Jason was so nice to Todd earlier today, I think I got to balance it out. All right?
That's fair.
Jason was sucking up. I'm just going to tear it down. But happy birthday, Todd. We do hope you have a terrific day. But I actually think that Todd is not super, super happy that Aaron Judge is going back to the Yankees because of how much money that ties up. Now, granted, the Yankees have the money. It's not Todd's money. He don't have to worry about paying a dime for it. But I know what Todd's thinking, and he even told me this before Judge signed, that you have more flexibility as an organization if you don't put all your money in one or two players. Mm-hmm. Now, the Yankees usually can still be really, really good despite spending or blowing a whole bunch of money. A guy gets hurt, they just go find another guy, trade for him, bring him in, re-sign him, give a whole bunch of money. They'll pay the luxury tax, whatever the case may be, although honestly, the Dodgers are worse. And now I think, you know, other teams are starting to get into Padres in regards to spending even more money than the Yankees. But that's the thing that I've talked about for a long time. You're better off spreading your money around. That's why not giving Tyreek Hill $30 million a year, I thought, was the right move by the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, not giving Orlando Brown a big deal at this offseason would be, I think, very smart of the Chiefs, because he has not played. At times he's played well. At times he's been really not so good. You could probably get somebody maybe just as good if you get a top-rated tackle in the draft. Maybe there's somebody else in free agency. I don't know, but I don't think he's worth $20 to $25 million a year as your left tackle. That's just me, and you tie up a lot of money. I didn't like the Chris Jones signing back when the Chiefs did that, giving him $20 million a year, because you just now, the quarterback, listen, if you got a franchise quarterback, you give him whatever you got to give him. That's the exception to the rule. But in baseball, I don't think there's a single guy in baseball, even pitchers, I don't think you should give Like in football, at least you got that marquee's position quarterback. In order to win a Super Bowl, you have to have a good or great quarterback. You cannot have an average quarterback and win a Super Bowl anymore. It's just not. It's not going to happen. There's no dominant, super great defense like there used to be in the day because the rules have made it a lot easier for the offense. And they don't allow you to touch the quarterback, so they're going to be healthy all the time. But in baseball, listen, I don't think $43 million a year for Max Scherzer is smart. I don't think $43 million a year for Justin Verlander is smart, and especially at their age. I don't think giving Trey Turner an 11-year deal for $300 million when he's 29 is smart. Now, no. When he's 24, it makes sense. Juan Soto right now, the only deal to me that would be somewhat smart is Juan Soto giving him 10 for $450 right now because he's still like 22. That might make some sense, although I still would say, once again, you're putting too much money in one player. If he gets hurt, you're messed up. But my point is, you put all that money with one guy. I mean, look at the Angels. They got $35 million a year in Mike Trout. They got Otani. They got two of the best players in baseball, and Otani's getting a huge one-year deal to avoid free agency. I think it was 30-some million, whatever it was. I'd have to look it up. Has that met success? No, they're about as bad as the Royals are record-wise. So everybody's like, Royals got to go spend a whole bunch of money to be good. No, they don't have to spend a whole bunch of money to be good. They didn't spend tons of money when they won the World Series in 15 or made the World Series in 14. They did not. Now, they got a little lucky. They got some bargain free agents that actually resurrected their careers, like a Chris Young, a Ryan Madsen, a Edison Volquez. I mean, they got a little bit lucky, probably. Do you have to spend some money? Yes. I do think the Royals need to spend a little bit more eventually with the new ownership group, but you've got to get to a point where you seriously think you're a contender before you actually spend the money, in my opinion. So I understand the Royals' philosophy, but these teams that hand out money left and right, that some aren't even close to being contenders, like the Texas Rangers. Last year, they gave a ton of money for Corey Seager, and he didn't turn out to be that great of a player last year. They gave a ton of money to somebody else. I forgot who it was. And now they gave a ton of money to Jacob DeGrom, coming off a year where he was injured most of the season. And when you get pitchers with arm injuries, those are a little bit, ooh, boy, type of situations. And what did the Rangers do this year? Nothing. They fired their manager. The teams that spend tons of money in baseball on these big contracts with players, I mean, the Dodgers can get away with it. The Yankees can get away with it. There might be one or two other teams can get away with it. And the Steelers still can be really, really good. But just because you got this big guy as a free agent or you bring him back, as the Yankees did, it's still going to make things a little bit tougher on you to fill some other voids. And that's what we talk about in football. Like, once the quarterback's contract really kicks in, Mahomes and Allen's and others, you got to be a little bit more frugal with where you spend your money, or you got to invest in draft picks. You got to let a guy like Tyreek Hill go because of the money on the books. Of course, there's a salary cap in football, whereas baseball there isn't, but there's luxury tax and everything else. But I think Todd today is probably not super pleased that the Yankees gave $360 million in 9 years to Aaron Judge.
To me, it's not so much the annual salary, it's the year. Yeah. I don't understand the Trey Turner one at all. Like,
he's gonna be 40.
I would rather have Justin Verlander now at 30, what we say, he's 38, 39.
Aaron Judge is 30, by the way, too. So you signed him. Yeah. You think he's going to be doing a lot at 39?
At least
he could be
still
swinging,
DH.
But he's probably going to be striking out a lot, too.
Yeah, he could be DH.
Yeah, he could be DH and still mash 30 of them over the fence, but he's not going to be he's not going to be this great overall hitter that he is right now. He might still be able to take some walks, but you're not going to be able to run with that. You're not going to be able to. But no, at 39, it's not great. But I would rather take Justin Verlander now at 2 years than Trey Turner
at
now
11?
At 11.
Yeah, although Turner is an everyday player.
Yeah.
But yeah, I get you. I totally get you. But anyway, I'm okay with the Royals not blowing. I mean, if the Royals spent a whole bunch of money on one guy, it could make or break the franchise for years to come. So if you're a Royals fan, you go try to get Chum and I one for $10 million, Greinke one for $8 million, that type of thing. And then you hope your younger players and you draft, you develop, you scout, and you can actually improve your pitchers with new coaches. And hopefully a new manager will help as well. And J.J. Piccolo's in charge. So we'll see how it all works. That's been the Sports Ticket today, Wednesday, December 7, 2022. Locker Room Chat's coming up later this evening with girls and boys basketball coaches of various teams at 5:15. Have a great day, everyone.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcast.